Hello everyone and welcome to edition 199 of the NRF1 podcast, your Formula One podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK. We're also on Future Radio in Norwich and brought to you by our proud partners Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up for the game for free by visiting nrf1.uk or gpro.net/nrf1. I am sports journalist Michael Bailey. Hello there. And we are at the Rush Cutters, of course, to round up the 2017 Singapore Grand Prix. Coming up, time for Ferrari's tweeter to join us on a kart track, that Marina Bay start, and a whole load of news from the Singapore wheeling and dealing. And joining us on the pod this week, we have one man, but he's a good man and a top man. It's budding F1 correspondent Callum Springle. How are you, Callum? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. You?
I'm good. This is cozy, isn't it?
It's a little bit cold.
It is a little bit cold. Might not be the longest podcast if we get a bit cold and head desperately indoors. Let me just give you a quick heads up, shall we? Next week, get your comments, questions and opinions in on our social media channels or on email. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at the NRF1. Email is nrf1podcast@gmail.com. Get your thoughts in for our three pods in 3 days and we'll make sure we discuss anything you want us to in terms of the Formula One world. And there is a lot to talk about, of course. Worth bearing in mind that the next podcast is also number 200. So why not get yourself mentioned and get your thoughts put across on episode 200 of the NRF1 podcast? What a special occasion that will be. So get in touch with us. So Singapore then, such a crucial moment in the 2017 season for me. And it came at the very start of the race at Marina Bay. Callum, let's digest the start, shall we? We all have probably seen it by now. Obviously, Max Verstappen managed to take two Ferraris out in one go. Remarkable.
Well, yeah, inadvertently. But yeah, it was almost sort of a Constantino right from the get-go, because Vettel got a pretty tardy start. Verstappen considerably less so, and Raikkonen even less so than that. So yeah, it probably would have been the case that if he had the room, Raikkonen probably would have taken the lead into turn one, and Verstappen would have at least been challenging Vettel. But yeah, you get a crash in those kind of scenarios partly because of the wet weather, because you can't see anything in the mirrors, and also because it's such a weird scenario to have, you know, three cars going into one corner at turn one of the whole Grand Prix. So yeah, it was a little bit of a racing incident, but I'm sure we'll get onto that.
Well, this is it. It's really difficult to know where to start, really. If I was to apportion blame, I would say that really, as you said, racing incident. I think everyone's going for the same corner, same piece of tarmac. It's really difficult when there's three cars in that sort of space of time. And I think the judges and the post-race investigation have both come up with no action required, haven't they? So that kind of says it all, really. If you were going to say who was maybe marginally more to blame than someone else, you could say Sebastian was, because he edged across when, probably given the conditions, it would have been very sensible for him to give everyone as much possible room, even if he didn't know they needed it. And I guess his visibility meant that he wouldn't have necessarily seen where everyone was anyway. And I think even after the race, Seb was like, I don't know what's happened. I've not got a clue. So you're asking Sebastian Vettel to preempt something that might be happening but isn't, and he can't see whether it's happening or not anyway. So as much as even I'm like, you know, you probably have to err towards the side of Sebastian's fault at just drifting to the left and knocking all the dominoes into place, that's really harsh, isn't it, ultimately?
Yeah, it is virtually impossible to apportion blame, certainly any significant and certain belief, because Vettel naturally will edge towards Verstappen. That's just completely the bog standard reaction for when you get a start, as he did. I mean, Michael Schumacher was one of the key exponents of poor starts, and he did it literally every single race. And that's the case with these, you know, ultra competitive world championship contenders, is that they're not going to give an inch to someone like Max Verstappen.
So having established there was no blame, let me just read the tweet from Scuderia Ferrari. This was, of course, tweeted out at 13:07, so they had, you know, a couple of minutes maybe just to calm down. Verstappen took Kimi out, and then he went to Sebastian. So effectively all down to Max Verstappen, who is obviously just sitting there. Mark Webber replied with this gold, said the press bloke that's never driven a go-kart, thinky emoji boxing glove. I mean, they did then try and continually dig their own hole, didn't they, Ferrari? What we tweeted was a factual description of events. No need to speculate on this. I mean, they did. I think Kyle himself said, why don't you stop digging your hole, Ferrari? It doesn't really, when you're looking at these teams and who you want to succeed, it doesn't really help when teams kind of behave like that, admittedly on Twitter, but still.
Yeah, I think the Twitter guy or the press guy or girl is never really in sort of in the know within sort of the upper echelons of the team. That's not coming from Maurizio Arrivabene. That's coming from literally the guy that's never driven a go-kart before.
And even we've done that, Callum, really well.
Well, apparently I have. So.
Wait till you see these handicap scores. Wait till you see them. Remarkable stat I heard. First time ever in Ferrari's history, I think that's right, certainly since 1950-something or whatever, that both Ferraris have gone out on the opening lap. And, I mean, let's be honest, this was the opening corner. So it's never going to end. They're never going to have a Grand Prix end sooner, ever again. You know, this is it. This is the perfection of ending a Grand Prix that you're going to start in double quick time. So quite a remarkable set of circumstances. Yet Ferrari probably weren't as unlucky as Fernando Alonso.
Yeah, he got an awesome start, didn't he?
Oh, so good. Round the outside, everything was smashing up around him. It all opened up. He was, what, third?
Yeah.
Just like, hello, boys. And then he just got whacked from behind, wiped out. And you had to feel so sorry for him, because it would have been great to have seen how Fernando would have managed, you know, being in that position in a car that wasn't, you know, didn't have a massive hole in the side of it.
Well, he said he would have got on the podium. So, yeah, it would have been for sure intriguing to see how he would have actually gotten on. But it was just such a great move to get on the outside, even on the painted stuff on the side of the track, where there was just a load of water. So how he managed to get through all of that, I've genuinely no idea.
Which does remind me of Max Verstappen's team radio when he was... He'd obviously had the initial contact and he went, oh, I've been hit, it's bad. And, oh! And that was the sound. Obviously, everyone's all right, which is the most important thing, but that was the sound of being hit by cars, Formula One cars. It clearly takes your breath away. And, of course, all this distilled down from the start. The reason this was also crucial is that Lewis Hamilton, who looked completely out of it all weekend, who was basically going to have... was almost going to look at... trying to finish fifth and then work from there, ends up with a race win. He got the miracle that he asked for, and this on the basis of me actually predicting that he would win it and then being convinced from the next morning that he wouldn't, because he said so himself. So it just, to me, if it's your year and something like this happens at a circuit where Ferrari and especially Sebastian Vettel has been so strong in the past, and it just really, as well as Lewis drove, fell into his lap. His name's on it, isn't it, Callum? His name's on this title.
Yeah, it's all over. Because from now on, I mean, the next race is Malaysia. So it's quite a high-speed, somewhat power-dependent track, which plays right into the hands of Mercedes. And there's Suzuka, which is exactly the same. I think after that is maybe Texas, which is quite a happy underground.
Mexico's in there somewhere as well.
Yeah, and that'll be prime Mercedes territory. Same with Interlagos, and then the only one that's really a Ferrari track is Abu Dhabi, by which point it's probably all going to be over.
Do you really think it's over?
Yeah, because between now and the end of the season, each track is one where Mercedes are equal to or better than Ferrari on the face of it. So unless Ferrari really pull a finger out, or Hamilton gets a load of bad luck, It's just not going to happen.
Well, it might happen. The load of bad luck is definitely a possibility, because what happened at Singapore at the weekend was nuts. So, but you could, I mean, even at the end, Lewis on the radio, he wasn't euphoric. He was just like, I can't believe it. Literally, this is nuts. What's happened? And it's a 28-point lead, as you said, six races to go, 28 points, 25 for a win. That is sizable. And I don't think, as Seb's only had a lead like that and once, maybe several races ago.
After Monaco, I think it's 25 points.
Woof. Right, if you want to make sure you never miss an episode of the NRF1 podcast, then get subscribed through your podcast player of choice. Visit nrf1.uk/podsubscribe and you'll find the link for you, be it iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Spreaker, Stitcher, Acast, all of them. That said, if you go to that page and your link isn't there, let me know. Send us an email, nrf1podcast@gmail.com, and I'll make sure that that link gets set up so that you too can subscribe, and you will probably find all 199 episodes of the NRF1 podcast in all its guises over the last 6 years. Five carriages for you there, Rich. I know you like to know. Right, let's fire up the NRF1 pit stops. And we are going to clock in, first of all, at Mercedes, Callum, because Valtteri Bottas confirmed he's staying at Mercedes for 2018. He had a bizarre offer. I mean, that is probably neither here nor there, really. I think we kind of saw that one coming for a while, given the dynamic between Lewis and Valtteri, regardless almost of his performances. It's like he's just done enough to be a good number two, and Lewis raves about him.
I think, yeah, to an extent, I think he genuinely could be a title contender, but the fact that, you know, he's been settling into new surroundings would suggest that he wouldn't be, you know, or would suggest that there is definitely more to come. But yeah, he's sort of had kind of fits and starts with, well, minus the sort of, what was it, 6 races previous to, I think it was Spa or Monza, where he was the highest point scorer.
True. Yeah.
So yeah, if he managed to capture that consistency, then yeah, he could be sort of a second Nico Rosberg.
Wow. Put that on your bio, Valtteri. I mean, the thing is, I think in 2, 3, 4 years time, we'll still be talking about Valtteri Bottas's inconsistency personally, because it's just always been there. But he had it in basically the course of one race, didn't he, at the weekend, because his pace in the wet was dire. It was terrible. He was literally going backwards. And I always think when the conditions are really treacherous, you can almost tell which drivers are going to shine and look really quick, and which are just like, don't fancy it. They're like, no, don't fancy this. I can't drive as quick in it. I can't see what I'm doing. I don't like it. Get me home. But they can't say that because they're racing drivers. So I'm not saying necessarily that Valtteri is one of those. So I'm not sure how he generally gets on in the wet. I don't think he's terrible in the wet, but just no pace at all. And as he said himself, once it started drying out, he started to really show some pace. And of course, lo and behold, he somehow finishes... I could not honestly tell you how he finished third in that race.
Well, the whole idea of both the Ferraris and Verstappen being knocked out does help that.
Well, that would do it, yeah,
And also with Hülkenberg's bad luck and you know, a couple of other things, Alonso getting knocked out certainly made the run a lot easier. But yeah, his pace in the wet really isn't that good. Honestly, I don't think it ever has been. But you can put at least some of that down to Williams. I think there's probably been one other wet race at Mercedes. Plus there's also the qualifying from Monza, where he was still miles off.
Yeah.
So really, I'm not at all convinced about him in wet weather. He's just generally not seemed to be as much of an adaptable driver as, you know, Hamilton or Alonso, you know, those kind of guys. But yeah, when it starts to dry out, when it's a kind of a mixed condition, you know, you're running on a drying track on slicks, then yeah, I think he is still quite handy, because he did get, I think it was like third or something in a Williams Renault a few years ago, in qualifying at least. Yeah. So he's definitely handy, but yeah, in certain conditions it's just not going to happen.
God bless you, Valtteri. He's going to get another go next year anyway, which a few of these lineups have been sorted out, actually. Red Bull, we've spoken about Max Verstappen and his continuing bad luck. I laugh. It's character building, Max. We've decided this. You need it. It's character building. Next year you can have a proper tilt at the title. But Danny Ricciardo, again, really banging it. Right place, right time. But the curious thing here, I suppose, is that all weekend Red Bull had shown such fantastic pace to the point where people, even Daniel Ricciardo after qualifying, was sat there saying, we will win this race. You know, we were going to win this race, even though Seb is on pole, we'll win this race. And of course, Max Verstappen did out-qualify his teammate yet again and was so close to becoming the first ever teenage pole sitter.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to have many more chances of that. This is probably his best chance for that one. But
that was his last chance.
He's
turning 20 on, I think it's the Friday or the Saturday.
Oh, is he? Oh, right, literally.
Malaysia Grand Prix.
So. Literally his last chance. Okay, fair enough. Where did the pace go come the race? Because there wasn't really a challenge from Ricciardo on Lewis.
I think generally the Mercedes is quite good in the wet. and when the track was drying and it was a bit green, low grip, you go lower speeds and have therefore lower tire temperatures. Mercedes' aggressive use of the tires is going to help that. So I think we all know to some degree that Mercedes go for outright downforce, or have done with this car, hence its speed on the high speed circuits. So that's going to help to a degree in the wet, because naturally you're getting more, so more downforce at lower speeds, so it's going to help sort of, I guess, kind of keep the tyres alive to an extent. But yeah, I think just the first phase of the race on the intermediates was just a really good drive by Hamilton. And we know that Red Bull are still very, very good in the wet. You know, you have to look at Monza in qualifying to know that. But yeah, from, I think from the moment that they put slicks on, the kind of the way Mercedes used the tyres just took over. Because in, you know, as I said, in those circumstances, you're going to be fairly hard pushed to keep tyre temperatures up. So it's kind of a mixture of Hamilton's consistency and just the Mercedes being the hardest car on the tyres.
And probably the car with the longest wheelbase as well, which probably helps when you're in the wet too. But there was a couple of interviews I saw as well, and obviously we're going to start getting into all the engine shenanigans and announcements. There were quite a few of them in Marina Bay, but the face on Daniel Ricciardo having to answer a question about Red Bull having Honda engines come 2019 was quite priceless, I think would be the best way of saying it. At the same time, Red Bull it wasn't announced, and I think the guy from, I can't remember who it was, but one of the guys from Aston Martin said that it's actually still a negotiation in terms of the cost of engines and whether they'd still want to be involved. But clearly Aston Martin are in talks about becoming a title sponsor with Red Bull. But this idea that, I guess because Toro Rosso have now signed a multi-year deal with Honda, you get the impression Renault don't really want to be, they don't want to be in a team as a Renault engine supplier when the sister team is a Honda supplier and all that data sharing that could go on. So actually, I kind of get the impression that Red Bull are in a bit of a sticky spot here over the next couple of years.
Yeah, they've sort of pushed themselves into a corner, really. But I don't know, you kind of get the sense that this has been coming for the last 3 years. I mean, the whole thing started at the start of the V6 era. So I suppose Renault aren't particularly displeased to see the back of Red Bull, and I suppose to an extent vice versa. It depends how Honda get on next season, and they're probably going to get picked up as an interim potentially for Aston Martin to take over in 2021, depending on the engine regulations.
But can they abort? I mean, they must look at McLaren and just go, mother lord of we can't possibly go through 2 years of that just nothingness, because it's taken McLaren almost to the brink. I mean, they will have Renault engines, and obviously the euphoria around that, and Fernando Alonso's already sounding quite excited, even though he won't say where he's going to be racing next year. I just think for Daniel Ricciardo, who wants Red Bull to improve anyway to keep him, Max Verstappen, who couldn't really sound any more impatient than he has done this year to a degree, you know, what are they going to end up with Daniel Kvyat driving for them in a couple of years' time, because their car's going to be so uncompetitive? Or can Honda actually tell? Is there an element that Honda could deliver something here that we haven't seen? Is that, I mean, Honda would no doubt say the issues they've had are, and I think they did in fact say it, systematic to McLaren. So it could be that they flourish now that they're in a different setup, Callum.
Yeah, there is that argument. And they're, like, Honda are putting so much money into their whole engine formula, it's ridiculous. But I think just to McLaren, they pay something like $100 million a year alone. And then there's other things like sponsorship and everything like that.
Wow.
But even if they did go with Red Bull, it's going to take an absolute age. It is going to take an absolute age just to get the car, or to get the engine, I should say, sort of up to standard, because they've been going at it for 3 years and still not really gotten anywhere. But that being said, they kind of changed the whole architecture of the engine going into this season. So this is essentially year one, and they've...
Again.
Yeah. But they've already made, not necessarily a significant amount of progress, but a decent amount of progress, given that it's only been, what, 15-odd races. So, yeah, the indications from the last 3 years would suggest that it's a nigh-on suicidal move from Red Bull, and it probably will lose them both Verstappen and Ricciardo. But, yeah, in the long term, it could be decent, because Sainz is still right up there, and I feel that he's on a level with Max Verstappen.
Do you?
Well, yeah, he matched him at Toro Rosso. I think the only real difference is just that Verstappen has a bit more technical flair, and Sainz is more, I guess, that kind of Alonso driver that just gets it done. But yeah, whatever happens, it's going to take an absolute age for Red Bull to be back up there again. Or at least that's the way it seems at the minute.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just not sure if a fizzy drinks company, so to speak, is going to be that patient, given all they've achieved in the sport and what's being demanded of them. But it'll be a fascinating thing to see how it works out. As I said, Toro Rosso, their multi-year Honda deal, will kick on from next year. Carlos Sainz, as you've touched on, that is basically the end of Renault engines, and as part of that deal, it looks like Carlos Sainz, well, it has been confirmed, is going to be loaned to Renault for a season, so presumably he still then has a contract to go back to at Red Bull afterwards, although I would be amazed if there's not a bit of, you know, that may be Red Bull's intention, but then come the end of 2018, it'll completely depend on how things have panned out, I guess, to what happens next, because if he goes and finishes fourth in the championship and a rejigged Renault, and Red Bull have got a Honda engine that's he's not going to go back. I don't see it.
Yeah, plus there is the situation where, and it is entirely possible that Ricciardo and Verstappen may well extend their contracts with Red Bull, meaning that there is no seat at Red Bull for Sainz to go back into, so he's got a 3-year deal that he's probably going to have to wait out at Renault on loan. So he's basically been turned into a pawn for the next 3 years, I guess.
Lucky boy. He did finish fourth, a cracking drive, in fact, around Singapore. Great, great day for him. Great radio message as well when he came across the line at the end, and his engineers and everyone at Toro Rosso, I don't know who they were particularly, but just having a right ball, cracking radio message. Less said about Daniel Kvyat, the better, probably, because he literally just drove straight off the track and into a wall. Yeah, that's it.
I mean,
it was wet.
I had to actually think about what happened with him, so I genuinely didn't know.
Didn't really turn, couldn't turn, bit wet, overconfident, having pulled off a decent overtaking move beforehand, and just the sound of him going, oh, sorry. Yes, sorry indeed. And then we should stop off at Renault too, because as we said, Renault, in making all those changes above, they will now supply McLaren, which is going to really, I mean, you're a big McLaren fan, aren't you, Callum, to a degree?
By association.
What's this going to do for McLaren? Is this seriously something that will deliver results? I saw an interesting line that Renault are hoping to see McLaren as a reference point for their own works team, which is clearly keeping them behind, if that's what that means. But that is probably going to do them do Renault a lot of good to have that, and I guess that's something they've always felt they couldn't do with Red Bull.
I don't really know what the difference is, to be honest, between having a Red Bull Renault and a McLaren Renault, because they're both of their strengths lie in the aero department. You know, they both, I suppose it says it all really, that Red Bull have Adrian Newey and McLaren's aero department is run by Peter Prodromou, who used to be Newey's right hand man, so it's exactly the same philosophy.
Do you think this will kick in from next year? I mean, how big a change is this? Because I always felt when McLaren went to Honda, that always seemed like a big task, because Honda were already years behind what Ferrari, Mercedes and Renault were doing, and Renault were struggling as it was. So that really, I've got to be honest, looked like it was doomed anyway, and the people who were saying it'll turn around in a year, even 2 years, it was just never going to happen. Maybe it should have turned around in the third year, but as you said, they're back to square one, so they probably shot themselves in the foot, so they probably caused their own issues there. But in terms of McLaren and Renault, what could we expect from them as quickly as next year? What will Fernando be expecting of them if he stays?
Well, if he stays, it's just to get wins and podiums, isn't it? Potentially a world championship. But
that's not going to happen, is it?
Well, from a reasonable point of view, I think you can only expect McLaren to have teething problems, because they've made a switch so late that now they have to sort of accommodate the Renault engine, which is, in terms of architecture, quite different to the Honda. I mean, the Honda's quite slim, whereas the Renault's a little bit more busty, let's say.
Busty!
And they also have to accommodate the halo, which then has knock-on effects for the aerodynamics over the top of the car and the front of the car. So, yeah, they've given themselves a bit more of a challenge aerodynamically, but I think by the end of the year, they should be on top of it, really.
Let's rattle through these last bits then, shall we? You mentioned Nico Hülkenberg's horrendous luck. I mean, he didn't manage to get himself into the podium position, so I think we should say that, given Valtteri Bottas's horrendous speed in the wet. But he then had technical issues which caused him to retire. He is now the driver with the most Grand Prix to his name, yet not a single podium in Formula One history. So yeah, that's more flattering to deceive from Nico. Meanwhile, of course, Jolyon Palmer finished sixth. And this after finding out before the weekend that he was losing his seat, and he found that out on Autosport. Poor old, you got a feel for Jolyon. He deliberately turned down answering a question on the fact that on being asked what it was now like to drive for a team that didn't want him. didn't want to answer that question. I don't know. Imagine why. Would you say that's it for Jolyon in Formula 1, or do you think he'll get picked up by another team?
There isn't really anywhere else for him to go. I mean,
they can't all end up at Williams.
Yeah, I think at the minute Williams looks like it's between Massa, possibly Kubica, Ericsson and Palmer, because I mean, you look at Sauber, there's no seat there because it's potentially going to go to Leclerc and Giovinazzi.
Ferrari too.
Yeah. Then Haas looks relatively shored up. Renault we also know about.
Force India confirmed their lineup as well this weekend.
Yep, so it's literally Williams or bust.
Williams or bust. And it could be that Jolyon's season comes to an end before everyone else's as well. Apparently his contract is pretty watertight, so I get the impression, again, just think of that question you refused to answer, Jolyon, that Renault are really pushing really hard so that Jolyon isn't in the car anymore. So, you know, as soon as Malaysia, I think, is one of the things they'd like to do, but I'm sure that will cost them, and that would of course be for Carlos Sainz to sit in the car. So I guess the interesting point then is, would it be Gasly who would step into Toro Rosso if Sainz moved over to Renault early?
Both Horner and Franz Tost said that Gasly would be the sensible option, let's say. So yeah, I would have thought it would happen.
Good enough for us, Pierre Gasly. Good enough for him too, I'm sure. And then just finally, we should stop off at Singapore because the deal was extended to at least 2021 for the race to continue. And we did have a decent race. I think we were quite critical of Singapore Grand Prix in the past last week, but actually, or was it? Hang on, I'm saying that. And what I mean is, it was a decent start and it rained a bit.
Yeah, it was just a start line crash and 2 hours of arguing over whose fault it was.
We're still arguing. No, we're still arguing over it. But of course, the good thing was there was no crowd trouble. It must be lovely to go to sport events where there's no crowd trouble. It's a little football joke for you there. Love you all, Sheffield United fans. Follow us on social media if you like. The channels are on social media, Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, the handle at the NRF1. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. As I said, get your questions, thoughts, opinions, anything you like on Formula One, email them to us at nrf1podcast@gmail.com and we'll use them in next week's podcast where we have 3 in 3 days. And that will, of course, be the latest news and then the build-up to the racing in Malaysia. Our website, nrf1.uk, is where you'll find our blog, stats, latest prediction league fun and games once that's updated, and betting tips, etc. Once I get those sorted, it's all there anyway, nrf1.uk. Give it a look.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Right, Callum, I don't know if we're really going to have to argue between ourselves over these, but let's rattle through these, shall we? Our of the weekends. Driver of the weekend?
Carlos Sainz.
Okay, I'm going to have an honourable mention there for Palmer as well, because he did finish sixth.
He's a bit lucky.
It was a bit lucky, but he was doing it in a team that didn't want him, so.
Yeah, but he was being completely outraced by his teammate and only finished ahead of him because of luck. Alonso would have been ahead of him, but didn't because of luck. And
all right, poor Jared, don't kick the man when he's down.
So with all the guys that he finished ahead of because of luck, he probably would have been about 11th or 12th all in right. A normal race.
Or maybe Carlos then. Team of the weekend?
I guess it has to be Mercedes, but then again, I kind of want to say Red Bull, just because they actually kind of showed their hand this weekend. So
they did, but then this was the race they could have won and they didn't win it.
Yeah, but it almost puts more pressure on Renault, because it's just saying, we have such a great chassis and look at the donkey that's powering it. It's got no power on at Monza.
I like that. Well, they need to make the most of it while they've still got Renault engines, I suppose. I was also going to say the safety car team. There's a cracking feature, which I know got picked up a lot on Sky Sports coverage. Great to see them do their work and just how far that's progressed. And they're kind of the forgotten guys, but they do a great job. So for me, they get that this week. Pastor of the weekend. Go on, who do you want to give it to, Callum?
Well, I know who you're going to say. But I'll probably give it to Kvyat.
Who did you think I was going to say?
Vettel.
Well, I was, but I feel harsh about that, having talked about it, because ultimately I think it was... It's going to cost him the championship that he didn't just take as much care as he possibly could and just drifted across when he probably, in the conditions, didn't necessarily have to.
Well, yeah, you say that, but literally every single driver would do exactly what he did, because that's exactly the kind of power grab move that you make when you have a bad start. You want to take the line.
Not in the wet. Not when no one can see what's going on.
But nobody can account for a third car being alongside Verstappen.
No. We're arguing about it again, Callum.
When it all happens, you know, when you can go from 0 to 100 kilometres an hour in 2 seconds or whatever, and it happens that quickly, nobody has that kind of judgment.
No. And I agree. I don't think there's any way he... don't think he was in the wrong, and it probably wouldn't have made any difference. But I just wonder if when he sits at home, there's a bit of him that just wishes he'd have just hung out a little bit or just taken maximum care, in the same way that cars all back off hugely in the wet because they know it's just those conditions need to be treated differently. But you know, I would actually give it to Kvyat for just driving off the track after a great overtake as well. Highlight
the start.
Really, well, what else was there?
Yeah, I guess it's between Alonso's start and Verstappen's radio message. I think that's got to be a first.
Yeah.
A live radio message during a crash.
Yes, yeah, that was tastefully tasteful enough to listen to afterwards, certainly. Yeah, and Sainz's radio message at the end, most definitely. I also thought it was interesting that Marcus Ericsson almost crashed under the bridge the one time that Rich didn't predict that it was going to happen. Likewise, I predicted that Jolyon Palmer wouldn't score a point because I got sick of predicting he'd get a point. Clown. And what we like to do is also rate the race. Now, we do this out of 11. At the moment, Italy is our worst race so far on a 5.38 score out of 11. It's probably your fault, that one, Callum. Of course, Baku is 12 out of 11, and the rest are all sort of middling. The British Grand Prix is probably a little bit higher because we were there and we were a little bit drunk on enjoying the racing live. Singapore, I'd probably... I mean, it's hard because there was great action, but then the race itself was pretty awful, so probably 7.5. But then that feels a bit high. What do you reckon, Callum?
I'd probably go 6.5, to be honest.
Well, that's an average of 7 then, isn't it? Which ties it with Belgium. Was Belgium better than this one?
Miles better. Yeah. You actually get a competition at Belgium, so...
Yeah, that's a fair point. But then the start was so good. It was... I mean, the thing is, the start was one of those moments where you just go, whoa, mother oh, wow!
But that's like watching the Champions League final only to just see one goal and get up and leave.
Yeah, but if that goal was that good. And it decided the game.
Yeah, but then you don't get the tension of finding out whether or not it actually did decide the game. You just check your phone an hour and a half later and go, oh, missed it.
The philosophy of watching Formula One. Well, okay, in fair, I would say there, Singapore and Belgium are tied. They were just very, very different races, but as good as each other. Callum's sort of smiling at that one. Brilliant. And final question, and you can't say Lewis. Who will have had the biggest smile heading home on their plane?
Normally I say Daniel Ricciardo, but well, for obvious reasons, but probably would have to be Ricciardo if it's not going to be Hamilton. Maybe Sainz.
Yeah.
Because he's got a great drive in his back pocket for next season. Gets away from Honda and gets a great finish. And actually, he's only the third Toro Rosso driver to finish in the top four after Max Verstappen and Vettel.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
That is good company, isn't it?
Well, I did say it was as good as Verstappen.
I think we'll leave it there. Great work. Top stuff, Callum. Right. We're done. Well done, Callum. That was sterling work for just the two of us. But what a delightful setting we are here at the pub. the good old Rush Cutters. We thank them for their hospitality. We will return next week with our three pods in 3 days. So that will, of course, be our news review and then our preview of Malaysia, and we'll bring you our predictions to remember to get your views in to discuss. The contact details are all during the podcast. In the meantime, keep all over our social feeds and especially nrf1.uk. Until then, it's a goodbye from me. It's a goodbye from Callum.
Goodbye.
Thanks to our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up at gpro.net/nrf1. And thanks to Future Radio. This has been the NRF1 podcast. That was Singapore. And we'll be back quicker than it takes the Ferrari Twitter account to blame someone else. Until then, goodbye.